Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen. Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome back to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like the Dale Hawerchuk statue, a bit off. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined as always by my good friend and Mark Scheifele's goat wrangler, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
It's going pretty good. Glad to be back, Mike. But now, I know you've had a great summer, and I have a few questions. Oh. You took a secret vacation to France, and now the Queen is dead. What am I supposed to make of that? And just where were you when Princess Diana died?
You know me, I'm like Billy Mumfries. I'm a cockeyed optimist caught up in international intrigue. No, we haven't talked about that. We've been kind of both been busy over the summer. But yeah, we did deke overseas. It was pretty cool.
Oh, I thought we hadn't talked about the Queen.
We
often talk about English royalty.
It is usually high tea time for us on Sundays. We usually 20 minute at least discussion on the Queen, but we haven't broached that subject yet. It's too soon. It hurts too much.
But we'll have a little bit more time. I wanted to throw this out there that we're no longer season ticket holders. We've been season ticket holders since the return of the Jets. There's nothing nefarious here. I know there's been a lot put out there about displeasure with the Jets, their performance, all of those types of things,
right,
the organization. But, you know, our season ticket holder group had just kind of run its course, and we're taking a year to reformulate. And I just want to put it out there because I do think that, you need to have some skin in the game. Just sitting on the sidelines and criticizing and not being, having some skin in the game is kind of... it's kind of a duplicitous in a little way. So just wanted to put it out there. But, on a more serious note, I'm quite ready and optimistic about the upcoming season. It's been a long off season. I'd forgotten how much I enjoy watching a Jets game at home. I've happened to watch a few of the exhibition games as much as possible, including the ones streamed online. Mike, what's been your take?
Yeah, I've caught all but one. And I mean, preseason is what it is.
Exactly.
So you caveat right up top. But I thought defensively, I think the system that we're running, and I've noticed a real change, substantial change, I guess, in not only our top six forwards, but the bottom six forwards in sort of defensive awareness and presence. And I know our high scoring, our high danger chances have looked favorable in all of the games except for the last one against Calgary. Yeah. Where we had one of our quintessential, low chance but high danger area scoring, and we just sniped them. I really enjoyed seeing some of the young guys and some of the meshing. Blake Wheeler's doing his Blake Wheeler thing in preseason, where he's barely on the ice and hardly trying. But I think it's been, I'm more positive now than I was, say, a month ago, given our inactivity over the summer.
Yeah, there's just, I feel strongly that there's just too much talent on this team for it not to be, a pretty darn good team. And I think that what we're seeing are some early decent returns on a new voice, a new system, a new approach. That's sports. Like, message and the messenger can get tired after a long time, especially with once you retain that group of athletes for a long period of time. And I think this is something that we as Jets 2.0 fans are only going through for the second time in 12 years, right? We've only had the one change in coach, and that brought in, Paul Maurice. So this is still new ground for us to see what this can bring. So I'm optimistic. I did see chunks of the Calgary game. I didn't see the whole thing, but I was concerned with the shots. And you hit the nail on the head. The score doesn't matter in preseason.
No.
Some of the individual performances,
yeah.
And then the process. And overall, there has been an improvement in process, but I was a little bit concerned that, it's hard to point to a game in which you get outshot to that extent and say, well, the process is there. But, we had stomped them pretty good earlier in the week.
Yeah.
They wanted some comeback. I'm sure they iced a pretty strong roster. And I think they have Calgary has a pretty darn good team.
Yeah, they do. They've got lots of talent.
Exactly. So we'll see. I think for the most part, we can be optimistic going into the early part of the season.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
No, I agree. And before we'll do a quick check-in time and touch on this a bit more, expound upon that a bit more, and some other things. But I did want to get your opinion. We haven't spoken about this. And this is going to be a bit blasphemous, and I recognize it. And I want to preface my comment by saying Dale Hawerchuk was my favorite hockey player growing up, and I wore number 10 all throughout my junior hockey as a tribute to him. But again, I've had several opportunities to see the statue out in front of the barn.
Office.
Right, it's right across from my office, and I appreciate the sentiment. My comment is just more overall with statues in general. I understand why we can't get these right. Like I prefaced it at the beginning, but like it's good. I like the attempt, but I don't understand why they tried to capture him in an action shot. And if you look at it from various angles, it really does look, you know, I'll say it kindly, a bit off. Is it a big deal? Absolutely not. But I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Because, again, overall, great sentiment. I'm glad we did it. It's just, everyone seems very taken with it. And I don't know if I'm the oddball thinking that it has a weird look to it.
Yeah, that's, I haven't put much thought into it. I did see somewhere where, I think it was in one of the retrospectives that they pulled together for the release of the unveiling of the statue, in that they specifically chose that pose because it was something about striving for more or reaching to be better or something like
English
that.
English lit stuff, great.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, it's kind of an on thing. It's there. I know it's really hard to capture a perfect likeness of an individual. I know
it is. You're right.
There's been attempts, like there's been some famous ones. Ronaldo had a bust done of him. It was just a huge joke, and I think it can be a difficult thing, not only to capture a likeness, but to capture sort of the spirit of the individual. So for me, it's just something that was done. It's nice. It was well timed for the organization. I think the organization needed something super positive so that people could direct positive energies in that direction going into the season, because there was a lot of, you know, negativity after last year. Now, this has probably been something that's been in the works for many years, so I don't think they said at the end of last season, oh, let's do a statue of Dale Hawerchuk.
Yeah.
Those things aren't pulled together that quickly. And if it is, good on them. But seriously, it's kind of a neat thing. You know, I do like the interesting thing is it's pointing true north and it ties it back to the company.
Oh, wow. You've given this more thought than me, other than my petty comments. Good for you.
Well, you know, that's what I do. I analyze. I'm an analyst. So paralysis by overanalysis over here. That's the story of my life. But it's a nice thing. I haven't seen it in person yet. I've only seen it online, and I look forward to the opportunity to see it. But I'm not. I guess if my office was right across the way, I'd have a lot more thoughts about it.
No, fair enough.
But it's not. I'm at the ledge. I get to look at the Golden Boy. So I'm not at the ledge. I'm
adjacent,
right across the street from the ledge. Yes.
Adjacent. Okay. Well, this is a good time as any check-in time. So I thought I'd start with Blake Wheeler. Okay. So for the first time in a long time, we don't have a new captain, but the old stalwart Blake Wheeler was stripped of his captaincy, and I've seen and heard and read a lot about how this isn't really a demotion, and it's, you know, some very touchy-feely and calm the waves conversations I've been a part of. And to me, this is, I wrote an article on it for our new website, which I will talk about at the end. We'll give you the link. But I thought this was a long time coming and warranted, and something where my only question moving forward is, A, are we going to pick a captain for the coming season? In my research for the article, I was very surprised at how many teams operate without a captain. And how many teams currently don't have a captain? I think the number's at 7 right now. And then B, what this means for Wheeler and whether or not we should be really aggressively looking to move him given the demotion, or whether he himself has approached the Jets and said, okay, that's fine, but I probably want to get out of here and get a fresh start. But wanted to get your thoughts.
Those are great questions, and we could probably spend the entirety of this podcast talking about, because those are fantastic questions. My initial thoughts are this, you know, I wrote a little bit on it, you know, because I anticipated it. This is, you know, one of the major issues that is the Jets going to deal with, especially early in the season. And, you know, so here's what I came up with. I said, there's been a great shift in the Regal universe in the past few months, not only in the House of Windsor, but also in the House of Chipman. Blake Wheeler is out as captain. The winds of change have blown open the doors of the Jets locker room, and fresh air is being let in. So this is the way I kind of look at it. There's several ways we can frame this issue. Some are characterizing this as confirmation that there is a toxic dressing room culture at the Jets, and we're at the precipice of organizational collapse. And that might be true. Okay, we're not in there. We don't know. We talk about that all the time. We don't know what's actually the case.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true, but whatever. I would argue that a transition in leadership within in an organization is needed at some point, and sometimes it can be a little bit messy. Okay, this is not just this is about any organization in the world. The fact that the Jets are in fact making significant changes internally suggests the organization is equally likely to be healthy and progressive as toxic and retrograde. Okay, the fact that there are several younger players who seem to be ready to assume a broader role in the leadership group is as likely a testament to Wheeler's positive work as captain over the past number of seasons as it would be as to the need to ship him out because he's toxic. Okay, yes, an incredible career is beginning to wind down. Perhaps more than just beginning to wind down.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's in his last vestiges. But it would be hard to argue this transition could have been more smooth than it was. There's no holdout. It was about as smooth as this tectonic shift could be, right? I think the organization and Blake Wheeler has handled it fairly well to date. I don't know. Maybe there's been behind-the-scenes meltdowns. There's been no evidence to suggest that. You know, Blake Wheeler, like you said, he's doing this preseason Blake Wheeler thing. They put him a little bit of third line Blake Wheeler. A lot of those things remain to be seen. But I want to think that there was probably something rotten in the state of Denmark, and we fixed the problem. And that's not necessarily the removal of Blake Wheeler in and of itself, but letting that fresh air in. I think that's what was needed. So it's not that Blake Wheeler was an impediment to progress. It's that we just needed change. And organizations change leadership all the time.
Yep.
Right? And that is natural and needed if an organization is to progress. And sometimes it can be a little bit messy, as I said. I think this has been handled pretty well. And I look forward to, you know, B-side Blake Wheeler. So,
The only thing I'll take a bit of exception to is I lean more on the side of that. I agree with everything you said, and it well said, and you're in mid-season form already, Vaughn. But I'm of the belief, and again, we don't know for sure because we're not in the locker room. But in the article I wrote, there were, you know, I tried to, as accurately as I can, describe what, you know, what is the actual role of a captain and what makes a good captain? And part of that, one of the factors that I included was malleability and some humility. Mm-hmm. And I think those are characteristics that Blake Wheeler sorely lacks in. And I think the malleability part of it really has reared its ugly head in the past 2, 3, 4 years, in that where there's smoke, there's fire. And, mm-hmm. and Laine's comments and other former Jets players, coaches, staff, it's, you know, it's not one drum beat, it's many drum beats. And so I think that there was a rift in the room to a certain extent, probably not as bad as I imagine or think, but I think that by doing this, I think, and we'll talk about Rick Bowness or Coach Bones, I think it was the right move.
Bonesy.
I think it was the right move, and I think it puts all the players on somewhat of an equal playing field, and, you know, you create a bit of a power vacuum. But I think the job of the organization now is to fill that vacuum. And I would assume, anyway, that we're just going to run the season without a captain. Because throughout preseason, Appleton's had an A on his jersey. Shifley's had an A on his jersey. Mm-hmm. Lowry has. Wheeler, surprisingly, hasn't had an A on his jersey once. But I think that even the assistant captains might switch over time.
Yeah.
But it is something where feel that unless Wheeler – accepts a third line role, which I think he can do and I think he can be effective at, then his presence to me might be a distraction. I will give him credit, everything outwardly and publicly. I think he's handled it really well, and I think you are exactly correct that the organization has handled it well, as best you can, for sure. This is my guess, and I'm just surmising, but I think that he's a prideful guy, as he should be. He's had a great NHL career, and I think behind the scenes he's probably disgruntled. And I think, as the other players, I've had that in my unillustrious hockey career where people have been demoted or people get chastised for something, and it's palpable. People notice. People, they're thinking, man, you know, this guy was our captain for 6 years, and now he's nothing. There's just that matzo ball in the room, and so I'll be interested to see how it plays out. If it's me, and if he's indicated any willingness to want to move, at this stage, I don't think we're missing much. I mean, I know he's effective on the power play, but I would be willing, as a fan, to say, you know, thanks for all your hard work, but we'll get some, you know, you're not going to get much for him, and there's very few teams who can afford him. But that would, you know, that was sort of my position. We'll see how it plays out, though.
Yeah, they say father time is undefeated, and sometimes, you know, athletes have a hard time seeing the reality of where they are, and I don't know if that's the case with him, but I do know the reality of his level of play versus his contract is not going to get him any suitors in the trade market. I don't think that trade is around the corner. I think he's here to stay. I do think that he has the capacity to begin to realize and bring perspective and reflect on a decade of excellence and realize that he's not going to be able to maintain that forever. No athlete. I mean, perhaps with the exception of Tom Brady, to be honest.
He's like, cracking at the seams.
A little bit, but the thing is, he's still the top 10 quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, no, it's true.
You know, which is insane. So, but, you know, for him to sit back and say, well, all this means is I'm not the Tom Brady of hockey, I don't think that is a negative thing. And I do think that there is an opportunity here for him to reflect and to be able to still contribute and still play hockey, which he wants to do, still cash some pretty robust checks, almost as good as the one I got last week.
Ching.
Show me the money!
Yeah, 3 years of back pay. So a lot of happy civil servants in the last 2 to 3 weeks getting our back pay.
That's awesome, man. Good for you.
We're not quite in the Blake Wheeler area, so...
You're not talking in cottages yet?
No. We'd have to have a lot of, like, decimals behind the you know, in the sense one to get up to the amount of numbers that Blake Wheeler gets. But, you know, I don't think our season this year will hinge on Blake Wheeler and his ability to adjust to not being captain or not. There's a lot more reasons to look forward and to look to others to see how this season will be defined.
No, and fair enough. And kitty corner to that, Coach Bones, as I'm going to call him from here on out, I think he set the right tone. I think at least he's saying the right things. Yeah. There's a strong message of accountability and defensive awareness. I think he, you know, he's probably a little more truculent with the media than Maurice was, but he's good with the media. And I think our effort throughout the preseason has been good. I liked his, you know, and there was a lot, again, more English lit stuff, but he used the phrase, like, you can't go out for a 55-second shift.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of reading of the tea leaves that was a direct shot at Mark Scheifele. But again, these are all things that I knew going in, though, right? Like, he, in Dallas, he was very defensive-minded, same sort of message, looks like the same kind of system. But at least thus far, it looks like he's executing on it. And so, I'm not sure what your thoughts are, but so far, so good, I guess is the best way to put it.
Well, the one thing that intrigued me when he was hired, I mean, he understands the NHL. He's 72 years old.
Right.
He's 72 years old. This is probably his last head coaching gig.
Yeah.
All right? So he does have the IDAAF or whatever, the I don't give a fuck vibe to him.
Right? Okay. Like, wow.
Whatever the acronym is that you see with the kids on the social medias, he's certainly got, like, all right, you know, that vibe to him. It's like, oh, you want it, this type of accountability? All right, I'll make sure they're accountable.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think that he's necessarily worried about you know, how his performance or will be viewed in the NHL with the way he handles this situation. He's 72 years old. He's seen a ton of things. He doesn't
he's been around.
Have to put up with anything. And it's very easy for a guy like to be like that, to be, all right, you want this? I'll do that, you know, because he's not worried about how that might be perceived by another team and worried about his next job and all of those types of things. He can really kind of go, all out on this one and I did it my way kind of thing, and I think we're seeing that. I think that he doesn't have to worry about are the guys gonna like me, are they not gonna like me. I'm here to coach them. I got a job to do, and we're gonna do it, and I don't care if your name's Mark Scheifele or Blake Wheeler. I think he sent that message pretty quick and pretty, and I assume it would be heard in the room. And back to the very quickly, and this is tied into Bonesy and Wheeler, is that, you know, I don't think there's going to be a captain this year. It's going to be a year-long tryout. Who wants to leave? Who wants to step up? Who's going to be able to do day in and day out, week in and week out? And, like, we're not going to anoint someone to be the captain. The next captain of the Winnipeg Jets is going to earn it. And I think that that's kind of part of the vibes that he's throwing out there. You know, and we talk about it all the time, and I coach, you know, Canadian university football. It's like nothing is given. It's only earned.
Yeah.
Right? And we talk about that all the time. So certainly it's going to be prevalent in a professional dressing room as well. And I think that that's one thing that, in over and above the new systems and those types of things that Bones and his crew are bringing to the Jets. And I think it's a good thing.
My early vote and what I had written was that I think the appropriate choice would be Morrissey at this stage, but I 1,000% agree with you. I don't think we're going to pick one this year, and I think it's smart to let players earn it and at the end of the year make a call. My second vote, and I'm going to change my Lowry bid, is now Lambert.
For captain.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I'm kidding. I'm all in, and I, if you'll permit me on my little tirade here, I understand. I do understand from a coaching perspective, from a development perspective, that he is probably better served in the AHL this year. I the fan in me, though, it bothers me. Because, I know he looked great against Montreal and Edmonton in the preseason. And then, you know, he stood out less, but still had two or three really incredible plays in Calgary. And I saw a bunch of discourse saying, well, see, he's not ready. And I was like, how, like, you know who never has any good plays? Harkins. You know who never has any good plays? Tony Anato, except for that one game. It's like, I never understood when real NHL talent, and I think he's going to be an elite-level talent, when they don't, it's not just on display every shift. The automatic sort of reversion is, hey, they need to spend some time in the NHL. I get it. I'm probably wrong, but to me, it's like, why not put him on the second line? He seems to have chemistry with Perfetti. Center them with Dubois. Why not make it fun, even for 9 games, and then send him down if it's not working out? We're scrambling at the deadline here to fit in Gagné and all these fringe guys who are completely replaceable when we might have a real talent here. Why not give it a shot? I don't know. It bothers me, I'm sure you've got the more sober and rational thought on this. Yeah,
I do. First of all, I'm all into. I love the pick. Somehow my kids. I was watching the NHL draft with them, and they were aware of who Brad Lambert was, and we literally cheered. Yeah, dang. Like they're all on the social media, and I don't know how they came across his name, but we cheered when we drafted him. So, you know, a bit of a great story. Well, it's not a great story for him in that it's kind of like he's overcome this adversity that he went through last year.
Right, yeah.
And how his stock dropped. And now he's sort of reclaiming that turf. And I'm all in. I think he's proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that he is going to be a top 6 NHL player. But he's 18 years old. And let's just go back to... Let's just go back to what we just talked about. Nothing is given... Everything is earned, right? Nothing is given. Everything is earned. So you undermine your message if you just anoint this 18-year-old into the top 6, right? Go down. Now, that was a line, a reasoning that Paul Maurice gave all the time. But he was lying. He was a liar.
No, he just didn't want to coach kids.
He just didn't want to coach kids.
Yeah.
Right? But this kid's 18 years old, and if he's in the NHL at 18, I'd be worried about him, you know, railing lines of cocaine off of, you know, waitresses, you know.
Where do you eat?
Hey, I just got that big check. So he's got some growing up to do, and I think it would undermine the broader message that you need to earn your spot on this hockey team. And I think that he's done a fantastic job. I am way more in the camp of let's give him 9 games as a good job for doing what you've done in the preseason,
okay,
and then sending him to the A. I think we're kind of on the same page there. You know, I think that I'm quite excited about what I've seen from him. I was great to see Chaz Lucius on the ice.
Yeah, it was. That was nice.
Yeah, and he looks like he's got a little something. He needs some more development.
Yeah.
I'm really pro Morgan Barron. You know, there were some of the other guys. Perfetti's looked like a bona fide NHLer.
Yep.
So there's suddenly, and we haven't even seen Rutger McGroarty on the ice, right?
No, I just saw a highlight on Twitter, and he pancaked some really? Guy coming out of the neutral zone. It was fantastic. Yeah.
I'm excited for him. So, you know, we have some good young talent, and let's just let Brad Lambert spend one season. Not a Sami Niku, okay? Not a Ville Heinola. I'm not talking about that. The way, you know, Brad Lambert's finished too.
We have a terrible track record, and I have PTSD a bit, right? Because we've done this a number of times. As we haven't developed, we draft, but we don't develop. I know the rational part of me agrees, and I knew you'd come over the top again in mid-season form and say the smart thing. I just when I first sat down, started watching games, I had some of the doldrums. I was like, man, this is the same roster, and you know we have talent, but we're headed for another fighting for a wild card spot. And then he was just sort of this bright light, and I latched on for dear life. And so I think is just sad that I'm going to watch more Moose games this year, or try to anyway. But just the fact that I'm not going to get to see as I would if it was on the Jets. Part of it's just selfish sadness.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have a lot of that. completely agree. Like, I was, you know, you see Chaz Lucius out there, and you say, okay, you know, definitely could see this guy playing the NHL one day, but that day is not today, and it's not tomorrow. Brad Lambert, it's just a different thing, right? It's like, oh, this is a whole different thing entirely. That guy jumps off the page kind of thing. One of these things is not like the others. In a way, some of those other guys didn't. Some of those other young guys didn't.
Right, exactly.
You know, there's a bit of boom and bust to his game. And I hope they don't, you know, I hope they allow him to be dynamic and freelancing in the AHL.
Yeah, give him the keys.
Give him the keys. Let him play. Play him on the top line. Give him lots of minutes. Develop him. Don't smash him down. Develop him. Let him be more of him. Let him be this dynamic skating winger that will make some plays and almost score an overtime winner, you know, after deking out real men, you know.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
So I'm really excited. I don't think it's, you know, the year of Brad Lambert yet. But I want to be clear. I don't want him to fall in the same trap. I don't want this organization to put him in the same trap that they put Sami Niku, that they put Ville Heinola, who's struggling to make that lineup now. Although I would have him in the top six, but
that's a perfect transition. We'll do a flight plan. And so, Vaughn, I'll let you, if you're so inclined, to sort of, do you want to walk us through just sort of the roster as it currently exists? As of this taping, I think we still have a few more cuts and pare downs to do. Burden will not be with the organization this year, and I don't have any, we're not a news breaking organization here at the Airport Lounge. So I wish, whatever's going on, I wish him the best. But do you want to take us through the roster and give me your thoughts?
Sure. Well, it looks like as a starting point that they're going to want to play Connor with Scheifele
and
Ehlers. There is a lot of pop on that line for sure. It's not how I would go about the forward lines, but I'll go through it quickly, and then we can do some analysis after.
Sure.
But you know, that line may struggle defensively. I think I think Ehlers, with his backchecking ability, his speed specifically, and his ability to enter the zone with the puck, will provide a lot of cover for them defensively. And that group will not need a lot of opportunities to score.
No.
We've seen that in the preseason. The second line, you know, we have the PLD, and this line hasn't really formulated. We think we know what it's going to look like, but it looks like it's going to be PLD with Perfetti and Wheeler. That's two-thirds. I like Perfetti with Wheeler. I think that could be a really good match. I'd have it more on the third line, though. And then you get to the third line. It's going to be Lowry and Appleton are going to be the main guys on that line. And then it's really a tryout for who's going to fit on the left wing there. And then you have the next group of guys. I don't know if it's going to be Sam Gagné, and I don't know if Sam Gagné, where he fits in. I get that we're a little light on the right side, and he brings some experience and talent in that way. But you're going to have guys like Morgan Barron, Dominic the Italian Tornado, Tornado, David Gustafson, all vying for, and there might be a couple other names that I'm missing there, vying for those final spots on the fourth line. Now, something I'll quickly throw out there. Now, this was a line that was put together for a game that I really liked, and this is all about third line Wheeler, Perfetti, Lowry, and Wheeler as the third line. I think there's some scoring there. I think there's some defensive prowess there. There's some size there. I think it's a really good balanced line. And what I'd like to see in the top two lines, Mike, and I'm going to make two quick points.
Okay.
Point number one, top two lines. I think about pairings, and I like Ehlers with Scheifele, but I like Connor with PLD.
Yeah.
And I don't think you need to have, you know, be in a certain tax bracket to be paired with Ehlers and Scheifele, right? Or be the right side guy for...
Yeah, it could be serviceable.
It could be a serviceable guy, a guy that will go in, if you went the puck in. Yeah, a Svechnikov-type player. That's a great analogy. A Svechnikov, I wonder where that guy is. I mean...
He's in a bar in Russia somewhere.
But that way, I think we could spread out our offensive scoring over three lines, which I think would suit us better to have. So I think we're very top heavy, and I think that's part of the challenge that we faced in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
being super top heavy and having this clear delineation between the top six and the bottom six, and I think that approach could really work with the way they want to handle the defense. I mean, if you have a more defensive player with Scheifele and Ehlers, whether it be defense, like let's just
who would say, you put there though?
Well, I know it's a great question, but this is not. I'm using this for an example only.
Okay,
you put a Morgan Barron or a Tony Nato up there with those guys. Oof. Your job is to back check and to
get pucks
deep, get in the corners, stand in front of the net, you know, occupy space, but because they're asking more from the defenders, so. You instead of attacking with four, you can attack with three, and one of those is one of the two defensemen, right? So we're asking for the defenders to be more engaged in the offensive attack. So I think that's where the balance comes in. You don't need to have those three elite offensive guys. You did under Paul Maurice because the defenders were not allowed to jump up into the play. Now, if we're having the defenders jump up into the play, that third guy is the guy that would naturally kind of drop back and assume a defensive role. So we have more of a flow of five players instead of a front three and a back two. That could sort of make up for the fact that we're not having these elite players so that... We can attack with three lines. We can use an integrated attack between the forwards and the defensemen and still have elite players out there for 75, 80, 85% of the game, which is what the top three lines play. So that's kind of my thoughts. It doesn't look like the Jets are going to go in that direction because I think you're quite right. You're going to say, who are those guys to play with? If we wanted to go Connor and PLD, who's that right wing guy? I don't know if Sam Gagner is a great fit for either one of those.
Right,
lines,
he's getting old.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't. You know, does Mason Appleton go up on that on one of those? I know you're not a fan. I like him, but he's much more of a fourth liner than a second liner.
Yeah.
So I do think that there are some holes in my theory, but you know, that's what I'd like to see. Maybe. In the long term, is a more of a spreading out of the offensive talent over three lines instead of a heavy emphasis on the top six, and then to be able, and that could be complemented and supplemented by the defenders getting more involved on the offensive side.
Yeah, and I don't disagree at all. But two things: one, and I sort of made this point, albeit somewhat abruptly, but I don't know if we have the personnel. And the ironic thing is, I think in free agency, there were a number of, there's not only Svechnikov, but a lot of Svechnikov-like players that are, you know, not necessarily at the NHL level really gifted or a sniping, but they're really good puck possession and, you know, good advanced stats guys, I think could have filled those roles. But I think we didn't even swing and miss. We just didn't swing. And the second part of it, if I'm looking at Bonesy's history, especially his most recent tenure with Dallas, that's how he ran Dallas, is one really heavy top first line. You guys get all of our points, and then we're going to cycle through three lines and be as tough-checking as we can, and we're going to try and be low-scoring, low-volume all throughout. And so I'm assuming that's the structure he's pinpointed here, right? Because they all, like, throughout the preseason, it's been either Scheifele and Connor, and they've been very dynamic, and it's very exciting. Like, the Perfetti, Dubois, Wheeler, I think you're going to have a lot of meh nights, right? Perfetti's still very young, Wheeler's still very old, and Dubois is, you know, I again, he's looked very impressive in the preseason as well. Where we, you know, where we fall off the rails is just the our bottom six. You know, you're high on Barron. I like him okay. And it's, you know, Lowry is doing his Lowry things. It's just, I look at that, and then I look at our D of the Morrissey, DeMello, I'm assuming it'll be Dylan Pionk, and then some combination of Hinola, Stanley, Sandberg with Schmidt. And so there's basically four guys, at least, vying for the one sort of playable spot on the D. Your three line rolling, in order to get out of that work, you also need very talented D, and I'm not sure we have the horses to do that. And I agree with you. I think if you're going to do that, keep Hinola then. I get it. He's making mistakes, but watching him on the power play, nobody else is doing what he does.
Nope.
Full stop. He's our best offensive defenseman, and if that's what you need and that's what you're asking defensemen to do, then go. Then let him play.
Right there. Yeah. That should be the tiebreaker right there, because it's not like Sandberg doesn't make mistakes. Stanley makes mistakes. You know, those guys make mistakes, and they offer nothing offensively.
Right.
Whereas Hainala is just on a different level at the point. He's better than anyone else on the team. Better than Morrissey. Now, I get that maybe he doesn't get anointed into PP1. He's on the second power.
No, yeah, I figured that.
And you know, I'm glad that you seamlessly transitioned to the defenders there, because I do think it's something we need to cover. Admittedly, I'm a big proponent of keeping Morrissey with DeMello, but I don't think it matters as much who plays with who, providing Logan Stanley is playing with his headphones in the press box.
Well played.
But rather how they play and which forwards they play with. In terms of how they play, I was very pleased to hear early on, as we've discussed, the defensive core will be asked to create offense and jump up into the play.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
Controlled entries are incredibly important for sustained offensive zone pressure, and I'm looking forward to a more active role from the back end in creating overlaps and numerical advantages in the offensive zone. I was always frustrated with how the Paul Maurice-Huddy regime deployed the defensive pairings.
Oh, yeah.
It sure seemed to me that rarely was the top pairing out there with the top line five on five.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
For me, it seemed like the top lines were often being held back by being paired with the lower pairing defenders. As I mentioned, I hope we can create more five-man units that can reinforce the skills and abilities of the forwards they're out there with, right? So I'd like to see DeMello and Morrissey play more with the top lines instead of trying to balance everything out and, And almost like if we are going to overload those top six, let's see more of the line one playing with defensive pairing ones.
Right, so, load it up.
Yeah, and based on what I've seen in my analysis, my final point is trade Brendan Dillon.
So yes, and Logan Stanley, yes, please. I don't understand the, you know, and Kovacevic went through waivers and got picked up by Montreal. So we drafted a guy, developed him, and then, you know, I can't even say his name properly, Capobianco. Like, he's still with the team, and they're basically duplicated.
Copacabana.
Copacabana. I think that's how we say it.
At the Copa, the Copacabana.
But we picked that guy up in free agency, and we have a bunch of those guys, and we just released one on waivers, and then they got picked up. Of course he did. But I'm gonna, one of my my New Year's resolution, not at New Year's, is I'm gonna focus less on the ticky tack stuff like that, because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. Our success comes and goes with, you know, a small number of factors, one being Hellebuyck, if he can return to Vezina form, the other being if we there's a full buy-in for Bonesy's system, and then we need to get, you know, basically career years from Dubois and Ehlers. And then I think we have an outside shot of making the playoffs. What say you?
I think you're spot on, and just on PLD, I'm optimistic he's going to have a very good season. He has a lot to play for. His next contract, which will most likely be another 1-year deal with the Jets, that's the most likely scenario. It will be strongly based on his output, so he's going to need to score if he wants to get paid, because it's going to go to the arbitrator, and they have a pretty well-established criteria, and it's weighted to points. So if he wants to get paid next year before becoming a UFA, he's going to need a big year this year. He also looks to be in better shape than when he arrived in Winnipeg.
He absolutely does.
Yeah, and like I said, I'd like to see him rekindle his partnership with Kyle Connor. I'm not sure that's in the cards, and I don't know if this is a bit of a play to Scheifele and say, like, listen, PLD, if we're not going to play you with Kyle Connor, if you're not going to, you know, commit to us long term, you know, if you want to sign a long term deal, we can, you know, elevate the people around you. But right now you're babysitting, you know, the child on the one side, and the geriatric captain on the other.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, so he's going to have to earn. He will definitely earn his next contract. But I'm optimistic.
No, good shape,
lots to play for. The stars are aligning there.
And speaking of getting paid, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that we're no longer with the Faceoff Hockey Network. We thank those guys and all the work and kind words they had for us and our partnership. We put together a new website. It's the airportlounge.ca, and like most of our online presence, it's a work in progress. It's kind of we're like the Logan Stanley of online presence, where the talent might be there
without
sometimes
the high expectations,
without any of the expectations
and the organizational support. That's what separates us from Logan Stanley. We both have a lack of talent, but he has great organizational support and high expectations.
Check it out. This one's going to go up. I'll put a link to it in the tweet when we send this episode out, and there'll be some articles, and we'll try and have some fun again this year.
I'm looking forward to it. I love doing this podcast. I love the Jets. I'm super excited. I so enjoyed watching their preseason games. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, as usual, I couldn't say it better myself. Do you want to take us out?
So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge. Check us out on Twitter at AirportLounge55, on the interweb at theairportlounge.ca, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast Podcast. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets go.
Good to be back. Sing the country song. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game.